If you have your Bibles with you, I'd like to follow along. I want to return to the 11th chapter of Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 11. We've been here the last couple of weeks, and there's much more. Don't know how much longer we'll spend here in this area, but Lord willing, we'll look a little bit more concerning faith. Hebrews chapter 11. I'd like to jump on over to beginning with verse 23. The last couple of weeks, we spent most of our time thinking about the faith of Abraham, how that Abraham, by faith, he obeyed. And this chapter is full of these patriarchs and matriarchs of old telling us what things that they were able to do by faith. They were able to overcome. They obeyed. They sacrificed. They were able to resist temptations. They were able to do all of these things strengthened by the Lord by faith. In their walk of faith, they had the testimony that the Lord was with them. And I'd like to come back maybe to that thought before we get through. But let's think a little bit about Moses. I mentioned to you before that in this chapter, we have at least one thing said about those who are mentioned, such as in the beginning of the chapter, such as Abel and Enoch and Noah. But with Abraham, there was more than one thing mentioned that he was able to do and what he did by faith. And then there was a few others, Sarah, and on towards the end of the chapter, there's several others mentioned. But Moses is one that also more than one thing is mentioned about him. Abraham and Moses were very important characters, if you will, very important patriarchs in the history of the Israelites. So let's look at Moses for a few minutes and see if some of this does not fit our case today and is not applicable still to us today. Verse 23, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. Faith overcomes fear. That's the first point I'd like for you to lay hold of. Faith overcomes fear. When you read 2 Timothy chapter 1, we find out that God has not given us that spirit of fear, right? I'm talking about fear in the sense of shrinking back, being afraid. Fear that keeps us from doing that which the Lord would have us to do, that holds us back even from obeying Him at times. That kind of fear. There's another kind of fear, another type of fear we are to have for the Lord, and it's a healthy fear. It's a healthy reverential fear. But the fear that causes us to shrink back from obedience to the Lord, that's the kind of fear we don't want and don't need and don't need to show in our lives. And that's not the fear that the Lord has given us. God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Faith overcomes that kind of fear. Here we're told that Moses' parents were not afraid of the king's commandment. Now, if you're not familiar with the what took place back then, you have to go back to Exodus chapter 1 and chapter 2, and you'll go back there and you'll see where Pharaoh had made a decree. The Israelites, they are becoming more and more in bondage to the Egyptians. In fact, they're multiplying, and Pharaoh begins to lay heavy burdens on the people of God there in Egypt. But the more the heavier the burden was laid upon them, the more they grew, the more they strengthened, the more they multiplied. There's a great lesson and a great sermon in and of itself. The heavier burdens that were laid upon the children of God back in that day there in Egypt, the stronger they became, the greater they became, and they multiplied in number. And so Pharaoh begins to be very concerned about this because they're about to outnumber the Egyptians, the Israelites were. And so Pharaoh tells the midwives of the that were there that as the Israelite women were delivered of their babies, the decree to the midwives were, if it's a male, you kill it. You kill him. Him, not it. You kill him. If it's a female, if it's a girl, then save her alive. Well, God was with those midwives. We talk about faith. God was with those midwives, and they just refused to do that. Now, when Pharaoh confronted the midwives, why aren't you doing what I said to do? I told you when a male Israelite was born that you kill him. And if it's a female, you save him alive. You're not doing that. Why haven't you done that, you midwives? And their answer was, well, the Israelite women, they're not like the Egyptians. They're real lively. In other words, when it came time to bring forth to birth, man, it happened quickly, and they were already born before the midwives could get there. So it seems that there was something even way back then that said to the hearts of those women, those midwives, that, you know, once the baby was born, it's murder. And of course, we know that life begins at conception, and even before the baby comes forth from the womb, that that little baby is a human being. That's a whole other subject as well. But that's what the midwives told Pharaoh. And so he sent out another decree. And let's go over there real quickly to Exodus 1 and 2. Or you don't have to turn there if you don't want to. But God favored those midwives. And so Pharaoh makes another decree. And he says that every son that is born, he shall cast into the river. You have a son born, you better cast him into the river. Do away with him. Well, here's the parents of Moses. And you know what? They did cast him into the river. They did cast him into the river, okay? But they weren't afraid of the king's commandments. And what they did, you know the account. They made him a little ark. When Moses was born, and he got to be about 3 months old, Moses' mother couldn't hide Moses anymore, couldn't hide the little baby anymore. And so they made a little ark of bulrushes, it tells us there in chapter 2. Daubed it with slime and with pitch and put the child there in that little ark and laid it along the riverbank in the water. And what happened after that is just simply amazing. Simply amazing. Nothing but the providence of God. Now remember, what we're talking about faith, and we're told here that faith that Moses' parents were not afraid of the king's commandments. And because they weren't afraid of the king's commandments, they did this to protect Moses, the little baby. And what happened next? Well, lo and behold, through the providence of God, it tells us in verse 5 of chapter 2, the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her maidens walked along by the river's side. And when she saw the ark among the flags, she sent her maid to fetch it. And, of course, we know that it was Moses. So Pharaoh's daughter, the daughter of Pharaoh, comes into possession, if you will, of little baby Moses. And we've heard this, I've heard it somewhere, maybe you have too, I don't remember where it was, so maybe we all heard it together. But we ought to be reminded of the proverb that tells us that the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. And here we have the daughter of the king, her heart's in the hands of the Lord, because her heart goes out to this little baby. The daughter of Pharaoh goes out to this little baby, and the baby was crying. Moses was crying, and it says that she had compassion on him. And said, this is one of the Hebrews' children. Then what happened? So here comes Moses' sister. Moses' sister comes along to speak to Pharaoh's daughter. Shall I go and call thee a nurse of the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you? Pharaoh's daughter, yeah, that's a good idea. Go do that. Go fetch one of the Hebrew women, and she can nurse this little baby. This is a Hebrew baby. And who did Moses' sister go fetch? Well, her mother. Her mother. She went and fetched her own mother. So, and you know what Pharaoh's daughter said? She said, take this child away and nurse it for me, and I will give thee thy wages. You talk about the providence of God, but because Moses' parents were not afraid of the king's commandment, because by faith they did this, the Lord worked all that out in his providence, and here's Moses' own mother being paid to nurse her own child. That's amazing. And so by faith, Moses' parents did this. Faith overcomes fear. Can we think about another occasion of, and you're very familiar with this one too. If we turn over to the book of Daniel, you know this account very well. But just to emphasize the point that faith overcomes fear, you remember the account of the three Hebrew, we call them three Hebrew children. They weren't children. They were Hebrew children of God, if you want to say it that way. They were men. They were young men. The three Hebrew men, and you know them by their Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Who can tell us, somebody might could, who can tell us their real names, their Hebrew names, the names that they, that we should know them by, not their Babylonian names. We should know them by their real names, their Hebrew names, their, the names that were, I think, given to them to reflect God's presence with their people, the Israelites. Well, I don't know them either. I have to look them up. Their names were Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. You know them probably as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. But you remember what happened. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, he sends out a decree. Don't you love to watch people, you know, men make decrees? The decrees of man don't mean much. Oh, they may be frightening. They may be intimidating, but they really don't mean much. Now, the decrees that God makes, that's the ones we need to pay attention to, right? That's the ones we need to pay attention to. But the decrees of man, when they oppose the Word of God, we don't need to put any stock in those. And eventually, they'll come to naught. They will. They will come to naught. Nebuchadnezzar makes a decree that, and the decree went something like this. We read, and this is in the book of Daniel. I'm just going to read real quickly from chapter 3 of Daniel. The decree went out from Nebuchadnezzar that when the people heard the sound of the cornet, the flute, the harp, the sackbut, I don't know what that is, the psaltery, the dulcimer, and all kinds of music, when the people heard all this kind of music going on, then they were to fall down and worship this golden image that Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. They were to fall down and worship this golden image. These three Hebrew young men, what was their names? Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. These three Hebrew young men, they refused to do so. They weren't going to bow down to this golden image. They, by faith, they refused to obey the king's command to fall down and worship a golden idol. He calls them into his presence, the king does, and Nebuchadnezzar says to them something like this, "Maybe you didn't understand. Let's try this one more time. I'll give you another chance. We'll make sure it's clear that you understand. When you hear all the music playing, you bow down and worship this golden image." Faith overcomes fear. Faith overcomes fear. There goes the music. It sounds off, and they react the same way. They did not fall down. In fact, this time when Nebuchadnezzar reminded them of what the decree was, he told them, "If anybody doesn't do this, you'll be cast into a fiery burning furnace." A burning fiery furnace, whichever. Well, they didn't. They didn't fall down and worship this golden idol. And so he calls them. You know what the response was? Listen to this. This is great. This is Daniel chapter 3, verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar." Now listen carefully. I know you're acquainted with this account. I know. But remember, faith overcomes fear. And here's three young men and Daniel facing, well, no, Daniel's not right in the picture just yet. But these three young men are facing a burning, fiery furnace. I don't know exactly I can imagine what that might look like. But the burning fiery furnace is intended to destroy. And in the destruction of whatever goes in there, if it's a person, there is the worst kind of excruciating pain and agony imaginable. And most of us can only imagine. So what was their answer? "O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. We're prepared to reply. We're not worried about what we are about to face. We're not worried about answering you, O king. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king." That's amazing to me. It should be amazing to you. You should be smiling right now. It's amazing to think that these three young men, this isn't just a fairy tale, that these three young men were facing certain death, excruciating, painful, tormenting death, but they refused to bow down. I mean, come on, guys. Couldn't you just done what the king said and just go? And you wouldn't have really meant it anyway. You know, and you could have just faked it and gone on about your way. And, no, No, we're not going to bow down to any idol. Faith overcomes fear. And you talk about mad. Nebuchadnezzar was furious. They went on to say, "But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up." And Nebuchadnezzar became full of fury, it tells us here. And he commanded that the furnace be heated 7 times more than normal. He commanded that those 3 young men be bound in their coats and their hosen and their hat, just be bound up with all of it, and they put extra garments on them, I guess, to make it, you know, make them burn longer. And they cast them into that fiery furnace. And in fact, the fiery furnace was so hot that the ones who cast them in there were consumed. And then what happened? Faith overcomes fear. I want to drive that point home. Faith overcomes fear. And they cast him into the fiery furnace. And Nebuchadnezzar, it says in verse 24, then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, was astonished. He was astonished. He rose up in haste and spake and said to his counselors, "Did not we cast 3 men bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said unto the king, "True, O king, yeah, we cast them into the fire just like you told us to do." And can you just imagine? And Nebuchadnezzar's out there, you know, his eyes were that big, astonished at what he saw as he looked into the fiery furnace. And he says, he answered and said, "Lo, I see 4 men loose." Loose. "I see 4 men loose, walking in the midst of the fire, and they have no hurt." 4 men. We only cast 3 in, right? There's 4 men in there. "And the fourth looks like the Son of God." Didn't look like the form of the Son of God. He says, the form of the fourth. What I can see of that fourth person in the fire looks like the Son of God. How did he know that? Faith overcomes fear. Moses' parents, they came out, and you know what? I guess we ought to read the rest of it. It's a great thing. They came out of there, and things changed. The heart of Nebuchadnezzar, in fact, he goes up to the mouth of that burning fiery furnace, and he calls out to them to come forth, and they came forth. And it says that not only the fire did not have power over them, not only did the fire not consume them, it says that the hair of their head was not singed. It says that their coats, just like they were when they went in, didn't change it a bit. Didn't affect their coats. There's no burn marks. And it says that the smell of smoke was not even on them. The smell of fire. Is that amazing or what? The faith overcomes fear, and God, I think, honors that. I don't think, I know. God honors that. Now, he may not deliver us immediately from that burning fiery furnace, but God honors that. I think that's why we have this entire chapter. In fact, I know it is, because as you go into chapter 12, he tells us, you see, we're compassed about with this great cloud of witnesses. And there's a reason that we have all of this here. So Moses' parents, they were not afraid of the king's commandments. What do we have next? He says in verse 24, back in Hebrews 11, "By faith Moses, when he was come to you..." Now, there's a lot of other places we can go. In fact, I'm made to think about the Acts of the Apostles in Acts chapter 5. You talk about faith overcoming fear. The apostles, let's see if we can get this real quickly, but without turning over there. The apostles in Acts chapter 5, they were out there preaching, proclaiming the Lord Jesus Christ, preaching the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ. That was their message. Christ had arisen. Christ arose. Jesus Christ, whom you slew on the cross, he is risen again. That was their message. And you see in Acts chapter 5 that they were out there, they were healing. God had given them power to heal people of all manner of infirmities. And you know what the religious Pharisees of the day, you know how they reacted? They were indignant. They were indignant that there was somebody out there, and especially that they were doing this right there next door to the temple. In fact, I think it was on the temple grounds. They were right there on the temple grounds healing. Nobody had given them the authority to do that. Yes, they had. God had given them the authority to do that. God bypassed the religious leaders of the day, and he blessed those apostles to heal people, all manner of their infirmities. And the Pharisees were indignant about it, and they get a council together like they always did, and they brought the apostles together, and they threatened them, and they threw them in prison. And before they could even, they barely had the prison doors locked until an angel came along and opened and released the apostles and told them to go right back to what they were doing. And they did. They did. They went back, and this time they are in the temple. And they're in the temple the next morning. Here comes the guards. They're sent to bring the apostles to the council, to the Pharisees, and they're gone. They're not there. The people who were supposed to be standing guard over them, they were still there. The doors were still locked, but the apostles were gone. And you know where they found the apostles? They found them in the temple doing the same thing that they had been doing the night before, the day before. And this time the Pharisees, they didn't want to make a scene because in the meantime, multitudes of people were being added. Multitudes of believers, they were being converted. And the people saw all of this going on. And the Pharisees knew that if they caused a real big scene, that the people would turn on them. So they very quietly called the apostles back to their council, into their court. And did we not straightly command thee to stop this? To stop preaching? And what was their response? What was their reply? We ought to obey God rather than man. You see, faith overcomes fear. We ought to obey God rather than man. And they went away a little bit later after they were beaten. They were beaten. That's not insignificant. But I'm just thinking that at that time, that probably seemed pretty insignificant to the apostles that they were beaten, they were let go. And then we find there at the end of chapter 5, it says they departed from the presence of the council rejoicing that they were counted worthy to suffer shame for His name. Faith overcomes fear, and God honors that walk when we walk by faith. So we read here in verse 24, by faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Talking about the faith of Moses. Faith gives us the courage, the strength, to refuse the world, and to refuse specifically, to refuse the world's promises of power and prominence and position. Moses, he had it made. He was the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He had it made. He could have, but he refused. It says that when he was come to years, I think this is kind of how it went. I'm not sure. We're not told specifically, and I'm trying not to think of the old Ten Commandments. Was it Charlton Heston in that? Great movie, but not exactly biblical. They took some liberty, but anyway, nevertheless. But I do think that when we read here that when it says when he come to years, in other words, when he reached that point where he began to learn who he was, and we read an account over there where he actually helped his Hebrew brethren there in Egyptian bondage, he came to know where he came from and who he was. And when he got to that point, when he reached that point of maturity and wisdom, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter any longer. Faith will do that for us. Faith will give us the courage and the strength to refuse whatever the world might promise us, whatever the glitter and the glamour that the world presents to us. Faith gives us the strength to refuse those things. And it says in verse 25 concerning Moses, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Faith also gives you the strength and the courage to choose righteousness. Faith gives you the strength and courage to choose that which is right. To refuse the pleasures of sin for a season. I can tell you by experience, those pleasures are only for a season. The pleasures of sin are only for a season, but some of the consequences and the damage to your mind last for a lifetime. Faith gives you the courage, the strength, to refuse the pleasures of sin for a season. It gives you the strength and courage to choose that which is right. Verse 26, here is Moses' mindset. Esteeming, regarding the reproach of Christ. Come back to that in just a second. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he had respect under the recompense of the reward. The reproach of Christ. The reproach of Christ. We're told time and time again in the New Testament. And I don't know if you remember, but a while back we spent a lot of time in 1 Peter. And about half of 1 Peter deals with this, with suffering. With suffering for the sake of righteousness. And we're told things over there. Peter tells us that happy are you? Happy are you if you suffer for the sake of Christ, for the sake of righteousness. There's joy to be found when we suffer the reproach. In other words, the reviling. Reproach literally means to revile or to rail on. I don't know if anyone here has ever experienced reviling and railing. Maybe you have, maybe to a degree, but there's always going to be some degree of affliction, some degree of ridicule. There's always going to be some degree of suffering associated with faith in Christ. Always will be. Because we live in a world that despises those things. So there's always going to be suffering. And Moses not only by faith chose to suffer. I mean, Moses, you had everything you needed. You had everything you'd ever want. You probably would have been the right-hand man to Pharaoh one day. Faith gives us the strength and courage to choose what is right, even when what is right means suffering for it. Maybe we should read a little bit of 1 Peter. Let's just very quickly remind you of some things. Peter says something like this. He says, "Who is he that will harm you if ye be followers of that which is good? But, and if ye suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are ye. And be not afraid of their terror, neither be troubled. Faith overcomes fear." That's the third chapter of 1 Peter. Peter went on to say this. This is probably needful. Let's read this very quickly. 1 Peter chapter 4. Peter says to people, he's writing to people who are suffering. He's writing to, you remember, in the first chapter, how he starts this letter out. He's writing to strangers who are scattered throughout all of these regions. Strangers. They've been scattered abroad. You go back there into the third and fourth chapter of the book of Acts, and you see that the church was scattered upon... No, you have to go a little bit later than that. I'm sorry. About the 7th, 8th, 9th chapters. The church was scattered because of persecution. The church was scattered abroad. And Peter now, later on, many, many years later on, he is writing to those people who are still out there somewhere who had been scattered abroad because of their faith in Christ. They had suffered persecution, all kinds of affliction. They were no longer, they were probably separated from their families. They were in a strange land. They were among people who despised them. They were either among Gentiles who despised the Jews, or they were among Jews who counted them to be traitors. So they were among people everywhere they went, suffering affliction for the sake of Christ. And he says to them, "Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you." The fiery trial. There's fiery trials that come when we, by faith, seek that which is right. "The fiery trial which is to try you as though some strange thing happened unto you." Don't think it strange. Don't think it strange. This is not uncommon. This is something common. In fact, it is something common among the children of God, among the people of God, throughout the ages. We'll come back to that in just a moment, all the way back to Abel. We'll get that in just a second. It's a common thread that runs throughout human history, all the way back to the beginning. Suffering that comes, and that's why we have this language. Let's read the rest of this. "But rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings." You are partakers of Christ's sufferings, "that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. If ye be reproached for the name of Christ, happy are ye." Moses esteemed, he regarded that reproach And the apostle uses this phrase, the reproach of Christ, because the reproach of Christ, any kind of suffering, any kind of ridicule, any kind of affliction you might suffer now for the sake of Christ is the same suffering for the same reason that the patriarchs and matriarchs of old suffered. Oh, they didn't know about Jesus. He hadn't come yet. You see, and that's where I want to go next. Back up into the middle of this chapter. I barely hinted at this last week, I think. Concerning these patriarchs and matriarchs of old, he says in verse 13, these all died in faith. These all died in faith, not having received the promises. You see, they hadn't seen the fulfillment. They knew something about a coming Messiah, but they hadn't seen it. They hadn't seen the fulfillment. In fact, many of them, in fact, in the wilderness, they didn't even see the fulfillment of the promise of the promised land. You remember that? A lot of them died in the wilderness. So all of these, even before Abraham, after Abraham, after Moses, after, they all died in faith, not having received the promises. In other words, not seeing the fulfillment of the promises, but having seen them afar off. They were persuaded of them, they embraced them, but they confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. I want us to think about the connection that we have with these people. And remember, this goes all the way back to Abel. All the way back to Abel. You know who Abel was. He was the first... He was the first generation to be born into this world, Cain and Abel, remember? The sons of Adam and Eve. So this goes all the way back to the beginning of history. Abel had this same faith. Enoch was a man who was translated. He had the testimony that he pleased God. And all of a sudden, he's translated. He goes up to heaven. He's taken away. You had Noah. You had Abraham. All the way up through that Old Testament history, by faith. And it is the same faith that you and I have today, because it is a God-given faith. It is a faith that God gives to His children, a faith that God gives to His people. And let's think about, let's read the last couple of verses of Hebrews chapter 11. After all of this long list, after this great cloud of witnesses that were given in Hebrews chapter 11, all of the things that they were able to do, look around verse 33 and 34 and how they were strengthened to obtain promises, to stop the mouths of lions, subdue kingdoms, quench the violence of fire, escape the edge of the sword. Out of all of these things, out of weakness, we're made strong. You see, that's what faith does for us. Out of weakness, it makes us strong. Faith. It's a God-given faith. It's not something that you have. You cannot make yourself strong of your own accord. But out of weakness, we can be strong by faith. Women receive their dead raised to life. All of these things. But then, he says, it kind of turns in verse 36. Now listen carefully. And others, are you listening? And others had trial of cruel mockings and scourgings, yea, moreover of bonds and imprisonment. Now we're talking about people who didn't necessarily subdue kingdoms or receive their people from the dead or wrought great victories. Now we're talking about people who are suffering. And they were suffering but the same reason that you suffered. For the sake of righteousness, the reproach of Christ. They were stoned. They were sawn asunder. They were tempted. They were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. I love this phrase, of whom the world was not worthy. Of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and in mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. You have a connection with these people. Not only do you have a connection with Abraham and Moses, Noah. Noah, by faith, Noah moved and obeyed and prepared for something that never had been seen in the world before. But you have a connection with Enoch, and you have a connection all the way back to Abel. These all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. Now, here's what I wanted. Listen to this very carefully. God having provided something, or no, it says some better thing for us. God having provided some better thing for us, listen carefully, that they without us should not be made perfect. They without us should not be made perfect, not complete. Think about it this way. Here's a little story for you. It's a true story. It's a very true story. The story has a beginning, okay? And it's found in Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. This story is, listen now. This story is the unfolding of the fulfillment of the will of God, okay? The unfolding of the fulfillment of the will of God. God established His purpose and His will before the beginning. But in the beginning of this story, we have the unfolding of the fulfillment of the will of God. That's the beginning of this story. You have a role in this story, okay? But you are not the leading character, okay? You're not the leading character of this story. You are a participant in this story. This story has a plot, but you're not the focus of the plot. You are a participant in this story. This story of the unfolding of the fulfillment of the will of God. There's something unique about this story because the author of the story declared the end from the beginning. He declared the end from the beginning. He's declared the outcome already. And the most comforting thing that I can think of about this story is that whether or not I fulfill my role, it doesn't change the outcome. How well I fulfill my role doesn't change the outcome because I'm not the lead character and the plot is not about me. But in fulfilling my role, you know what I need? Faith. That's what this chapter is all about. Faith. Faith that you have in common with Abel from the very beginning. And you will have in common, this common thread will run all the way to the very end. And there is an ending to the story. There's an ending to this story, an ending to the unfolding of the fulfillment of the will of God. And you know what? You want to know what that ending is? Let me read it for you. 1 Corinthians chapter 15. For as in Adam all die, even so in Christ shall all be made alive. But every man in his own order, Christ the first fruits, afterward they that are Christ at his coming. Then cometh the end. When Christ comes back, then cometh the end. The end, the fulfillment, the end of the unfolding of the fulfillment of the will of God. Think about it. Where are we in all of this great big story? From the time of Abel all the way to whenever the end is going to be. Then cometh the end when he shall have delivered up the kingdom to God, even the Father, when he shall have put down all rule and all authority and power. Verse 28, and when all things shall be subdued unto him, then shall the Son also himself be subject unto him that put all things under him, that God may be all in all. So I think about the beginning of the story and the ending of this story, and somewhere in there, you and I, there we are, somewhere. But we have something in common with people 6,000 years ago, that lived 6,000 years ago. It's faith. And we have something else in common. And the reason we need that faith is because they suffered afflictions. They suffered the ridicule. They suffered far more than what any of us know about today. But we have the same sufferings in common with those people. And this great story of this unfolding of the will, the fulfillment of the will of God. That's one reason we have this chapter on faith. Wherefore, seeing ye also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and run with patience the race that is set before us. He doesn't stop there. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of God. The story will be completely fulfilled one day. But you and I are on this, think about a spectrum from one end to the other. Somewhere on that spectrum, there we are. It makes me feel kind of insignificant. And as far as, I guess, history is concerned, especially in the eyes of the world, I am, and we all are, pretty insignificant. But the greatest event that took place in this story, this unfolding of the fulfillment of the will of God, the greatest event that took place was a man named Jesus, who was the Son of God, who hung on the cross and brought eternal redemption. He obtained eternal redemption for you, for a great multitude of people, a great multitude of people that no man can number. Where are you in all of this? I don't know. I can't do the math. I'm that much of a great multitude of people that no man can number. So, concerning that event, you're not insignificant. You're loved of God. You're a purchased possession by faith. By faith, we can overcome, because faith drives out fear.